back down and shut your trap. It's time for
Keeping it sports with them three.
Are you ready?
Going well for you here on this Monday, the 11th day of March. I am, of course, Mike Emporio Wisanski, coming to you from the Connecticut School of Broadcasting here in Cherry Hill. Hope you all had a great weekend. Hope you all are off to a great start to your week. A week that I kind of look at this week as the calm before the storm. A week we're about to hit, I guess you could say, a giant cloud or giant barrage of so many fun, exciting, great things in the sports world. Take it 2 weeks away from the start of the baseball season. 6 weeks remaining in the NBA season, and still so much up for grabs there. Jockeying back and forth for position as far as the play-in spots in the Western Conference, and the intrigue of whether or not teams like the Lakers and Warriors can avoid having to not just play in the play-in tournament, but have to play in the dreaded 9-10 game, meaning they'd have to win two games in order to get into the postseason. And then where you have this clump of teams in the Eastern Conference that are just two games apart from fourth and eighth as far as avoiding the play-in. We've got Selection Sunday coming up this week for the NCAA tournament, and hell, even some fireworks getting started in college basketball with a crazy situation that happened yesterday that I'll talk about a little bit later on. And of course, football with free agency set to begin today. Technically, this is what they call legalized tampering period, where you can talk to teams about trades, you can talk to free agents, but you can't make any deals official until 4 o'clock this coming Wednesday, which I've never quite understood that, why that's a thing. In every other sport, you agree to the deal with your guy, you get to sign them right away. In the NFL, they've got this nonsense that goes on, and we sometimes have seen players renege on a deal at the very last minute and go back to the team that they were on. I've seen it before with my New York Jets. But it's a day that Giant fans have been concerned about, have been worried about for a while now, because it's decision day for them. It's decision day for Saquon Barkley. And just reading the tea leaves, not knowing any of the inner workings, not knowing anyone on the inside, just my view of things from afar, it feels like we're heading toward a breakup in the marriage of the New York Giants and Saquon Barkley. It feels like we're heading for Barkley playing for another team next year, and Giant fans being gutted, having their hearts broken, especially depending on what team he ends up on, and Barkley getting that big payday from someone other than the New York Giants. But let's be honest, this shouldn't be all that surprising. This shouldn't be something like, oh my God, I can't believe Saquon Barkley may not be a New York Giant. if you've paid attention over the last year, it has become clear and obvious that the New York Giants have made their decision on Saquon Barkley. When you take into account this regime, Joe Shane and Brian Daboll, they did not draft Saquon Barkley. They were not the ones that made what I call a boneheaded decision like Dave Gettleman did in taking a running back at number 2 overall. And that's not to rip or criticize the player that Saquon Barkley is. Saquon Barkley is an awesome player, is an amazing running back. If you look at this class of running back that he's mixed in with the free agents, it's him, Derrick Henry, Josh Jacobs, Austin Eckler, and Tony Pollard. Well, some of them may be a better running back as far as between the numbers, say Derrick Henry or Josh Jacobs, or one may be better pass catching out of the backfield as far as Austin Eckler. None of these guys provide the dual threat Barkley presents for the New York Giants or for any team that matter. None of them provide that option where they're great as both a guy you hand the ball off to or catching passes down the field. He brings it all. He has an amazing skill set that cannot be matched. But he should not have been drafted number 2 overall. If the Giants didn't like one of those quarterbacks in that 2018 draft, they should have traded back. They should have picked up more picks. Running back at number 2, when you consider the salary cap, and when you consider the Giants have been a franchise outside of that one playoff year last year that has been in rebuild mode for a very long time. They have not been a good football team really since the end of the Tom Coughlin into Ben McAdoo era. They had that one playoff year, and then Ben McAdoo got full of himself, and the whole thing started to fall apart from there, and you had this parade of coaches in on just two-year tenures, whether it be Pat Shermer or Joe Judge. Now it finally looks like they've got the coach in place. Now it finally looks like they got the guy that they want to run this team going forward with Daboll and Joe Shane. And clearly, they do not see that future being with Saquon Barkley. Otherwise, last year, they wouldn't have placed the franchise tag on him. They would have put it on Daniel Jones and locked up Barkley to a multi-year contract. And they've tried many times over the last year to lock up Barkley to that multi-year deal. The problem is, Barkley has not been getting offers with the amount of guaranteed money that he would like. He wants somewhere in that range of $24 to $27 million guaranteed, and that's just not a neighborhood that the Giants feel comfortable in. It's never been about the year-to-year value of the deal. I think right now, if you got these two sides together, they would agree that $10 or $11 million per year is a fair mark for Saquon Barkley, for not just what he brings to the table as far as a player, but also as a person, as a locker room leader, as a great face of this organization. But you saw a week or two ago at the NFL Scouting Combine when Joe Shane was asked about this, how would you determine Barkley? Would it be based on running back market value or what he brings for this team? And Joe Shane, without even a second thought, said running back market value. If he was someone that highly coveted having a big-time running back, they would have locked him up by now. But it goes back to then the mistake that the Giants made this past year, because the Tommy DeVito cute little story there where they went on that
little three-game win streak, got themselves somewhere back into wild card contention heading into December. Kind of mucked up what the Giants really are. The Giants are not a good team. The Giants do not have any explosive weapons, do not have any all-pro talent outside of Saquon Barkley, at least on the offensive side of the ball. They're clearly looking at the future when it comes to the quarterback position because, once again, just like Barkley, they didn't draft Daniel Jones. That was a Dave Gettleman pick. So they want to start fresh. They want to start with their own vision. There are very few guys that are going to beat holdovers from the Gettleman run. Two guys that they already paid in Andrew Thomas and Dexter Lawrence. So they're going to be looking to start fresh with a new quarterback. Now you could argue, wouldn't it make it easy for that new quarterback, whoever it is that they draft, to have a Saquon Barkley here, have a weapon that you can view as your safety net when you consider there's no wide receiver in this organization right now that has really jumped off the page. And it remains to be seen what somebody like Jalin Hyatt turns out to be. They're not really locked in and secure at the tight end position when you consider Darren Waller was on and off the injured list last year, and he's already contemplating retirement. So there's a lot of holes, there's a lot of needs that the Giants have to fill on this roster. And even though the salary cap bumps up to $255 million, and you could say $10 million in a $255 million salary cap, that wouldn't be too much to throw at a running back, too much to throw at a guy that has been a model citizen, has been a great player when on the field. And that's part of the problem with Saquon Barkley. His availability at times has been his worst ability. While I'm sure in this free agency and in the draft, the Giants will put an emphasis on an offensive line because part of the problem why Barkley has sustained these injuries is outside of Andrew Thomas, he has not had that many good offensive linemen to run behind. The Giants probably feel those assets or those dollars that they would spend on Barkley would be better use toward that offensive line. As someone who's not a Giant fan, I don't understand, quite frankly, the attachment that certain Giant fans have to Barkley. Even as great a player as he is, as great a person as he is, just when you consider the fact that the Giants have not won really anything with him here. They had one playoff season, won one playoff game. Outside of that, it's been a lot of drag. It's been a lot of miserable, awful football that you've seen. None of which has been Saquon Barkley's fault. He's just been, I don't want to say a looter and a riot, because you've seen that he is truly an electrifying talent. But when your one electrifying talent is the running back position in a sport that has devalued that position, it's kind of hard to have an attachment to this guy, especially when you've done very little winning with him. And listen, it sucks when you have a player that you like, that in some cases with this fan base, you really love, that you've become attached to, and you see them walk out the door. I mean, hell, look across the river at the City of Brotherly Love today, and the emotion they must be dealing with the retirements in 1 week of Jason Kelce and Fletcher Cox. Two guys that have garnered legendary status with that organization. Two guys that were humongous parts of them winning their first Super Bowl championship. So, yeah, every fan base, every organization goes through it, losing a guy that is homegrown, that you drafted, you watched develop before your very eyes. But when you take a step back and you look at the big picture here, when you realize all the flaws with this team, you're going to realize that it's probably for the best that the Giants move on here and focus putting their assets in places other than running back. They need multiple wide receivers. They need multiple offensive linemen. Andrew Thomas, they're locked in at left tackle. But left guard through right tackle remains a bunch of question marks. So this organization has got a lot of work to do when it comes to building a team, when it comes to putting a roster together. And it leads to, and I was going to get to this moment ago before I got off on a little tangent there. It leads to, once again, a lot of confusion on why Joe Shane did not trade Saquon Barkley last year at the NFL trade deadline. You had teams interested. You probably could have got, at minimum, a third-round pick for him. Hell, maybe even found a desperate team that was in contention that would have given you a second-round pick for Barkley. Why did you hold on to him if you had no plans to place the franchise tag on him? Or seemingly, as it feels right now, no plans to re-sign him? Because you hear and see all the rumors. You see all the potential teams that could possibly be interested in him. We've heard the Ravens, the Raiders, the Texans, the Eagles, the Chicago Bears, the Chargers. We've heard so much about Jim Harbaugh's interest in Saquon Barkley. With all of that, why didn't you trade this guy last year when you could have gotten something back from him? Now, you're going to lose him in free agency for nothing other than what? Cap space? So it's very somewhat confusing how the Giants handled it in season. But as far as during the offseason, I can understand why they've taken the route that they've gone. When you consider this front office and this regime in total did not draft him. And when you consider the devaluation that there has been in the running back position as a whole across this league, it seems unfair at times. It seems like something that, as a Giants fan, that you wish you didn't have to go through. But these are the difficult decisions that organizations have to make. And you hope that you come out on the better end of things here. You hope that this vision that Brian Daboll and Joe Shane have leads you to a better place, especially when it comes to the rumors that you see as far as who they're potentially locked in on as far as their next quarterback is concerned. Whether it's J.J. McCarthy, whether it's Jaden Daniels, whether it's Drake May, whoever is sitting there for them at the sixth pick, they're going to get that right. That is going to hinge upon these guys' future. See, they've gotten out here because it's not drafting Daniel Jones or drafting Saquon Barkley. They could say, oh, this is our chance for a fresh beginning. But if they don't get it right with that fresh beginning, they're going to be left without jobs in about 3 years, left with a lot of egg on their face, and left with an organization dealing with even more questions than it already had. All right, plenty left I want to get to throughout this podcast. Going to talk a lot of NFL as we go on here, mix in maybe some baseball, definitely some basketball throughout this. Whole bunch of things that I want to talk about here. Not sure I'll be able to get to it all, but we'll see how things go. We'll see how efficient I can be with my time here. So, as I tell you, each and every single week at this time, please sit back, relax, help put your feet up if you feel like it, and continue keeping it sports with M3.
I'll be back.
As well as the Indianapolis Colts locking up Michael Pittman to a $70 million contract extension. That was the one of at least two franchise tags that bummed me out as a Jet fan. That was a guy that I was really hoping would reach free agency, really hoping that he would become available for my team, because the Jets, just like the Giants, have holes that they need to fill, especially at wide receiver and along the offensive line. Can't just rely on that number 10 overall pick in this coming year's draft to fix those holes. One thing that they're not going to have to be concerned about is they do have the quarterback position in place. At least we hope we do, with Aaron Rodgers returning off of his torn Achilles from last year. He was doing the rounds last week, doing a lot of interviews, including making a return to the Pat McAfee show for the first time as we head into this new league year, and started to shed a little bit more light on his playing future. Told McAfee, as well as several of the podcasts that he was on, that he's hoping to play beyond 2024. In fact, in his mind, as long as he can stay healthy, he hopes to play 2 to 4 more years in this league. He told McAfee last week, "I don't think next year will be my last year. I felt like when I came here, I got kind of a renewed passion and love for the game. I felt like I wanted to play with the Jets at least 2 years, and I feel like this year is kind of a lost year now that I only played a couple of snaps." So you like that, but the concern is, of course, that he is heading into his 40s. He's going to be turning 40 at some point late next season. And a guy coming off of Achilles injury at that age is, of course, a concern. But you like hearing that he's motivated. You like hearing that he's got this renewed vigor about him, this new, hopefully, sense of urgency when you consider the Jets are a win-now team. This is not a five-year plan, let's build for the future kind of situation. No. When you bring in someone like Aaron Rodgers, you've got to have the urgency to win right now. That's why there's a lot of pressure on Joe Douglas, a lot of pressure on Robert Saleh heading into this free agency and this draft. Because you've got to shore up this offensive line. That was, to me, the biggest reason, besides just slipping on the artificial turf, and why Aaron Rodgers got hurt last year. The fact that you had a bunch of stiffs on that offensive line. You counted on guys like Dwayne Brown to still play at a high level late in his 30s. Or that Mekhi Becton, after 2 years of not playing, being injured all the time, was going to be an effective tackle. They probably went through the most offensive linemen anyone in this sport. You You can't just rely that Eliza Bo Tucker is going to come back healthy and that Tippmann is going to fully take that next step in his second year. You hope that that's the case. But those can't be your only answers on this offensive line. You can't go into next year with question marks surrounding it. That has to be a lockdown sure thing. And I know nothing's ever really a lockdown sure thing when you look at how injuries tend to happen in the sport. Hell, we've seen a lot of them in this area amongst the many sports in recent years. But the Jets have to place a priority on that offensive line. They need to place a priority on the wide receiver position as well. When you take into account, let's face it, Garrett Wilson pretty much puts himself through a full body workout just to get the football each and every week. His numbers, the fact that he's gotten 1,000 yards each of the last 2 years, really should be elevated in its excellence level when you consider he's not had that legitimate number two option at the wide receiver position. He's not had that guy that teams have to worry about. He's getting double teamed every play. And there have been, unfortunately, options taken off the table from the Jets as far as potentially finding that guy. Just mentioned about the extension for Michael Pittman. You also mix in there, shortly after I recorded last week's podcast, the Buccaneers re-upped Mike Evans to a 2-year, $50 million deal, keeping one of the best players in the history of their franchise, a Tampa Bay Buck, for the next couple of years. There's also the Bengals having T. Higgins locked on the franchise tag, but as we've seen this morning, Adam Schefter's reporting that T. Higgins wants a trade. While he wanted to be with the team long term, he's disappointed that the team has not had any long-term contract extension talks with him since last year, and he wants to move on. So if you're the Jets, you've got to look at that and say, what would we be willing to give up for T. Higgins? Because he's a big guy, 6'4", about 220, 230 in that range, would be the perfect guy to put on the opposite side of Garrett Wilson and give you another threat downfield, another explosive offensive weapon. Would you be willing to give up a future second-round pick? Is that something that the Bengals would agree to? Because you don't have a second-round pick to give up for this year based on the Aaron Rodgers trade. So that's something definitely they've got to look into. You're not going to be able to get Davante Adams. Looks like he's going to be sticking around with the Las Vegas Raiders. As I said before, there's got to be a sense of urgency here. Not just because of what you have as far as timeline with Aaron Rodgers, but let's look around that division right now. The New England Patriots are in rebuild mode. They just traded Mac Jones to the Jaguars yesterday. Not that he was anything great. But they've got a new head coach and are likely going to be drafting a quarterback, number 3 overall in the draft. The Miami Dolphins, while they were a playoff team this past season, Tua Tagovailoa is constantly dealing with some kind of injury each year. They lost a lot of key pieces as far as injury are concerned last year. And they're always a team that starts great, but then starts to fade as the weather affects their play. And then there's the team that has run the division the last 4 or 5 years, the Buffalo Bills, who are your biggest adversary to overcome. But we're seeing that they've started to wave goodbye to what were a lot of important players, a lot of important pieces to this contentious run that they've been on the last several years, including cutting Tre'Davious White, who's dealt with a lot of injuries the last 2 years, cutting Jordan Poyer, likely waving goodbye to Micah Hyatt, who's going to be a free agent and may even retire. They've shedded over $25 million in salary cap in the last week. So there is an opening, as we speak, for the Jets to start to make some hay, start to make a little bit of a run at things in that AFC East. And they've got to take advantage of this opportunity. And how do you do that? By putting pieces in place that are going to keep your almost 40-year-old quarterback safe and healthy. By giving him that extra weapon to take advantage of defenses downfield. Because we know Rodgers doesn't just have a strong arm. He has a very accurate arm. He's not a guy that throws a lot of interceptions. And you got to take some of the pressure off of Garrett Wilson. These are all things I'm going to be looking, not just the next 48 hours in free agency, because as we know, names will start to come off the board really fast. But as we get to the draft, that the Jets have to focus on in order to make 2024 as a successful season as we all hope that they can make it.
I'll be back.
As far as the overall total is kind of the floor that Saquon Barkley is looking for as far as his guaranteed money is concerned. So something that we'll pay attention to, something that I'll continue to keep an eye on. One of the biggest fish of this free agent crop, and I had a feeling that this guy was never actually going to make it to free agency. Chris Jones came off the board over the weekend as he signed a record massive extension with the Chiefs that I think will all but ensure that he finishes his career with the Kansas City Chiefs, getting a 5-year, $158.7 million contract extension from them with $95 million guaranteed over the first 3 years of the deal. And you look at it, the Chiefs are just a different team when Chris Jones is on the field compared to when he's off the field. They were first in yards allowed per play when he was on the field, the 23rd in the league in yards per play when he was off the field, allowing 4.3 yards per play with him on the field and over 5.5 yards with him off the field. This guy has been a dominant presence who has just gotten better and better each of the last several years. It's been a big reason on why they've won 3 Super Bowls in the last 5 years. And he has the mindset of, hey, let's run it back here. Let's try to be that first team in history to pull off the three-peat. And this is a good first step for them, getting this deal done, getting this deal secured, because now you've got him in the mix here, you can work on other pieces, and they've already re-signed linebacker Drew Tranquil. Now they're going to be looking to see if they could either re-sign Legarius Sneed, or maybe they get something good in return from someone else in trade talks as they place the non-exclusive franchise tag on them. So that remains to be seen. But a lot of interest heading into this free agency has been placed on the quarterback position. A lot of people are waiting to see where all the chips fall, all the dominoes end up when it comes to these quarterbacks, because last year we had almost a record number of players starting a game at the quarterback position, 66 players. So there's going to be teams that are not just looking for their starting quarterback this year, that are also looking as far as depth is concerned. That's why, you know, people were looking at the Mac Jones trade yesterday and saying a sixth round pick for Mac Jones, like, you could have probably got him for less, but the Jaguars wanted a capable body in there as their backup quarterback. Well, I don't think Mac Jones is great by any means. He's regressed the last couple of years. You have to remember, he was solid in his rookie year with Josh McDaniels as his offensive coordinator. Then when Bill Belichick started to play around with things and had defensive and special teams guys like Matt Patricia and Joe Judge in there running the offense, that is when Mac Jones started to regress. That's when we started to have conversations of who's the Patriots' starting quarterback, Mac Jones or Bailey Zappi. And he had two really disappointing back-to-back seasons in 22 and 23, leading to the Patriots being able to select third overall and trying to draft a new quarterback with new head coach Jerod Mayo, starting new there. And the Jaguars needed a capable body behind Trevor Lawrence, because even though he started almost every game last year, remember, they were on pace to be a team in contention for the one seed on the AFC side of the playoffs. And then as we headed into the month of December, that's when Trevor Lawrence started dealing with a lot of injuries. Remember, he rolled his ankle in that Monday night game, was able to come back the next week, but was really never the same after that, even dealt with a shoulder injury late in the year that caused him to miss Week 17 against the Buccaneers. And they saw what happened last year. Everyone saw what happened, how there were overwhelming amount of teams that had to start multiple quarterbacks. There were at least 10 teams that lost their opening day quarterback in the first 2 months of the year, whether it be Rodgers going down, Kirk Cousins going down to injury, Joe Burrow was lost for the season halfway through, the Browns went through a cavalcade of guys at quarterback position, the Steelers were rotating guys in and out at quarterback. So there's a heavy emphasis of these teams, or a heavy emphasis by these teams, to make sure that they are locked in at the quarterback position going forward. And I mentioned the Steelers. The Steelers are hoping they have found at least a short-term answer at quarterback when they agreed to a deal with Russell Wilson last night. And I'm very happy for Russ that he got out of Denver. Listen, he deserves a huge chunk of the blame there, especially year one. If there's any truth to these reports about him having his own people there, him essentially having an office, him having his family at training camp or on the facility constantly, that's not a great look there. That's a divisive thing that can have a lot of players looking at you saying he's not carrying his end of the bargain here, is still getting all of these perks. Not something you want to hear. But when they brought in Sean Payton as the head coach last year, it almost felt like from the beginning, Sean Payton was ready to cut the umbilical cord, was looking to have a problem with Russell Wilson. And I said this from the beginning, I'll say this again. if you had such a problem with Russell Wilson, that entire year off that you had from coaching, each and every single week, you were in the Fox One studios with Colin Cowherd. You had the chance to rip him to shreds then and never did. But when you became his head coach, you decided to create this public vendetta against him, cause this public issue, even going as far as them threatening to bench Russell Wilson if he did not agree to rework his deal, find a creative way for Russ to waive or adjust that $37 million injury guarantee that was in his contract. So with that dirty way of handling things, and then benching him late in the season when, look at, he put up solid numbers last year at a 66% completion percentage, 26 touchdowns to 8 interceptions. They were in the mix for the playoffs heading into the final couple of weeks of the season, and then they still benched him. I'm glad the Broncos have to deal with this severe level of a salary cap hit that they've got to deal with. $85 million worth of dead cap money, and now watch as he signs with the Pittsburgh Steelers for the league minimum, and they've still got to pay him $37.8 million this coming year. Kind of karma there heading toward the Broncos, but I think this is a good fit for Russ. We know how good defensively the Steelers are. They have some quality weapons at the wide receiver position, including Deontay Johnson, have two good running backs, and Mike Tomlin always seems to figure out a way to get this team in the mix, have them sitting there in playoff contention late in the season, has never had a losing season, and with Russell Wilson having a bounce back year last year, I think this is the perfect fit, especially, like I said, they're only spending $1.2 million on him, the league minimum, still leaving enough room for them to use some of that asset on other pieces, other needs to fill up their roster. And with him off the board now, you start to look at other things that could be happening at quarterback. We saw Baker Mayfield sign a 3-year extension with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Give Baker a lot of credit because, remember, when he signed with the Buccaneers this past offseason, nothing was guaranteed. There was no assurances that he was going to be the starting quarterback for them, and he was able to have kind of a bounce back year after being a guy that was just thrown around the league so much, was a guy that no one really wanted, and now he's got a $100 million contract on his hands. So a bunch of these other guys that could be out there, these guys like a Ryan Tannehill, these guys like Jacoby Brissett, guys that have been kind of thrown around the league, they can look at someone like Baker Mayfield and say, you know, maybe I could be that guy next year. Or with how this league is so fluid, with how so many guys went down to injury this past year, you get in the right spot and you get the opportunity to play, that could be your chance to finally make it big, finally get the big bucks. But a lot of that is going to hinge on other things that go on here. We've seen that Mac Jones gets traded. In all likelihood, at least two more of the quarterback draft class quarterbacks from 2021 are going to end up on different teams this coming off season. Whether the Jets trade or release Zach Wilson, that remains to be seen. And then we wait to see what the Bears do with Justin Fields, who they're able to trade him to, who is that team that says, you know what, I could be the one that builds a package, builds a scheme that fits his attributes right, that can bring out the best in this kid that the Bears were not able to do. But I think that stuff, trades for those kind of guys, is going to wait until after we see what happens with Kirk Cousins, where he ends up. And it looks like, while they may be kicking and screaming at doing so, that it might be a breakup in the marriage between him and the Minnesota Vikings. And you got to give Kirk Cousins a lot of credit here. Because Kirk Cousins, when all is said and done, is not going to be a Hall of Famer. Is not going to be someone that we remember as one of the greatest quarterbacks in the history of the league. Well, good, not great. We're all going to remember him for being the guy that played the system to its highest level. And what I mean by that is when you consider all of the guaranteed money he's gotten, the franchise tag that he initially got from the then Washington Redskins, then the guaranteed contracts that he kept getting from the Minnesota Vikings, including his first deal with them, which was $84 million, 100% guaranteed, and kept getting re-signed. In total, he got $185 million from the Vikings over the course of 6 seasons. And now he's going to be looking around on the open market. All of the rumors have him tied to the Atlanta Falcons, a team that feels like they're just a quality, capable quarterback away from being a contender, a team that could potentially snatch away the NFC South from the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. So that is going to be amongst the many things that we watch for in the next several hours and days to come in this potentially chaotic NFL free agency. Left on the clock. At the time, the Gamecocks were leading by, I believe, 7 points. And what ended up happening is Malaysia Flew Whitley stole the ball from Flajo Johnson of the LSU. Looked like she had a breakaway layup to go down the court. Johnson would wrap her up, commit an intentional foul there. There was some pushing and shoving, including with the biggest player on South Carolina coming, running up in Camilla Cardozo, and just flat out steamrolling her over, leading to everyone coming off of the benches, even Johnson's brother coming out of the front row of the stands, leaping over the scorer's table. All of a sudden, you just see this guy come out of the front row of the stands, leap over the scorer's table. He's out there kind of pushing people apart a little bit before police eventually grab him and escort him off. A wild, chaotic scene there that at first, even the announcers weren't sure of the ruling here, because the game stopped for 20 minutes as they reviewed the tape. And when all was said and done, only Cardozo was ejected for fighting, but everybody else from both teams was ejected. Everyone that was on the benches, should I say, was ejected, because you're not allowed to step on the court during a on-court situation, on-court scrum there. And at first, the announcers thought, oh, all of those players were going to be suspended from their teams. next game. No, as it turns out, only Cardozo will receive a one-game suspension for fighting. And you saw that Dawn Staley was very apologetic, even with her team winning that game, upset, kind of embarrassed by the way the situation was handled. Meanwhile, on LSU, Kim Mulkey was more so hoping that Cardozo had tried to pull that with Angel Reese, thinking that it was kind of a cheap shot. And well, yes, it was a blindside spot there. All of this was created by LSU. All of this nastiness or potential fighting that happened here was caused by LSU with Johnson committing the intentional foul and then kind of shoving someone before leaving the court. I thought that she should have been also ejected for fighting, not just allowed to really kind of get away scot-free on this. She should have received a game misconduct and been suspended as well for their next game, which will be in the NCAA tournament. But, hey, create some spice. Create some flair here for if and when these two teams meet up in the NCAA tournament. Now, under the column of things you don't like to hear, just as I was getting started recording the podcast today, I got to see these reports that Aaron Boone is telling the media Garrett Cole will have an MRI on his pitching elbow. There are two things that you cannot take away from the Yankees heading into this season. That would be Garrett Cole and Aaron Judge. Anybody else on the team I view as somewhat replaceable. But Garrett Cole especially, when you consider, I know people are getting all up in arms about how the pitching staff has looked in spring training, in particular the starting pitchers. Rondon, Cortez, and Schmidt have all been knocked around in their most recent outings. Marcus Stroman has actually looked the best of this group of starters. But Garrett Cole, he's your ace. He's your only sure thing. You cannot afford to lose him. He's the best pitcher in baseball right now. Just won the Cy Young Award. So that's going to be something that I am monitoring in the days to come and saying a deep prayer that everything's okay with him. But at least I could say that Garrett Cole is earning his money. That Garrett Cole is out there doing what he's supposed to be doing. Unlike what I'm seeing when it comes to Ben Simmons. Ben Simmons, who's now going to be missing the rest of the regular season due to ongoing back issues. The Nets announced this last Thursday as he's going to consult with specialists and explore treatment options for a nerve impingement that has been affecting his lower back, even so much so that he missed 38 consecutive games earlier this year and has only played 15 games this past season. What a total waste, what a total bust Ben Simmons has been for the Brooklyn Nets. Hell, can we make the argument that Ben Simmons has been a bust in general for his NBA career when you consider, yeah, he's good defensively and a really good passer. After that, he does nothing. He doesn't shoot the basketball. Afraid to take shots from beyond, or I would say 5 feet away from the hoop. And is a guy that in his net tenure so far has only played in 57 of a possible 192 games. And the blame for this, the hell that the Nets have to go through with carrying the albatross that is the Ben Simmons contract, as he's still got 1 year for $40 million left on that deal. How this man is making $40 million is beyond me. It goes on two people. One, you can tie it back to Kyrie Irving with all of his nonsense, where he didn't get vaccinated, he couldn't play home games, then they caved and let him play road games. That pissed off James Harden, leading him to forcing his way out of here. He gets traded to the Sixers in that deal to match salaries. We took on Ben Simmons' contract. And that has led to the hell that we're at here. But the real blame, to me, should go on general manager Sean Marks. When does it become Sean Marks' fault? When does he become the fall guy? Why is he the cat with nine lives? When you consider this team 5 years ago was heading in the correct direction. This team, in fact, had a direction, had a clear plan. They were not a great team, not a team that was going to win championships, but they were a team that was garnering attention around the league. Players looking at them and saying, hey, you know what? They're building something there. They're building it the right way. They got young, fun, exciting players there. They got D'Angelo Russell Payne. They developed guys like Spencer Dinwiddie, Caris LeVert, Jared Allen. But they sold their soul to the NBA devil in deciding to just hand over the franchise to Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant. And we saw how that turned to worse for this team. Because halfway through the 2019-2020 season, about a week before things shut down for the pandemic, Kyrie decided that he was done with Kenny Atkinson, put him away with his buddy Kevin Durant, and Kevin Durant advised the front office to fire Kenny Atkinson. Then, prior to the next season, they do the foolish thing of signing Steve Nash to be their head coach, who had no experience whatsoever as head coach, was really just there to be a babysitter. And things started to become hectic. They traded everything to get James Harden. And that ended up only resulting in them winning one playoff series with that group as they beat the Celtics that year in five games before losing a seven-game series in the second round to the Milwaukee Bucks, in which Kyrie Irving went down with injury, James Harden was playing through a hamstring, Kevin Durant was an inch away from hitting what would have been considered the biggest shot in Brooklyn Nets history. After that, you had all the chaos that happened with James Harden. He ends up getting traded away. Steve Nash gets fired early in the 2022-2023 season. Eventually, they would trade Kyrie Irving, trade Kevin Durant. They gave a contract extension about a year ago to Jack Vaughn, only to fire him as the head coach a month ago. So why does Sean Marks keep getting these opportunities? Why is he the guy that is going to be allowed to pick the next head coach on this team? If you're Joe Tsai, you've got to look at the last 5 years and say to yourself, wait a minute, all the money I've spent, all of the assets we've given away, and I've got one first-round playoff series win to all of that, and in all likelihood, we're not going to make the playoffs this year. Why stick with him? Why continue on with Sean Marks? He has made what looked like a really good situation turn into an outright mess. And what looks like kind of a mess right now is the New York Knicks. Because, as we know, the Knicks have been dealing with a lot of injuries, have been missing a lot of key pieces. But they've got themselves in a situation where a month ago or so, it looked like they were going to be battling it out for the two seed. Right now, they're just hoping to avoid the play-in in the NBA playoffs. Because I mentioned this earlier, you have a two-game gap between them and the Miami Heat for eighth place in the Eastern Conference. And I mentioned last week that this coming stretch for the Knicks was an important stretch. We have been talking about how they got very fortunate with the Jalen Brunson injury. He only had to miss one game. And even with missing that one game, they should have had enough firepower on this team to beat the Atlanta Hawks last week. There's no excuse to lose to that Hawks team without Trae Young at home in that fashion. And to get blitzed in the first quarter the way that they did, yeah, they were able to rebound well by beating up on the Orlando Magic on Friday night. But then last night was just the sub of all basketball games, was just immensely hard to watch. When you see a score at halftime of 37-31, most nights that's the score at the end of the first quarter. Hey, the final score of 79-73 is sometimes a halftime score. That is the worst offensive display two teams have had in the last 8 years. The Knicks were awful from behind the arc, going 9-40. What was even worse is how much they were turning the ball over. They had 21 turnovers. I think 5 of those were in the first, 4 minutes of the game. 8 might have been in the first quarter. They were just miserable and never were able to really chop down and truly come back in this game against the Philadelphia 76ers. A Sixers team that is still without Joel Embiid, has been without Tyrese Maxey for the last 4 games due to a concussion. And the Knicks put up the worst offensive display that we have seen by any team in the league this year. Hell, they showed more fight in that fourth quarter scrum between Oubre and DiVincenzo than they did offensively all night. And now you've got the weird scheduling quirk where they play the Sixers again at the Garden tomorrow night. In all likelihood, the Sixers will have Maxey back as they head into what is a very difficult stretch here. I think they're playing 11 of the next 15 games on the road, starting with this 4-game West Coast trip that they've got coming up starting on Thursday. And the only real gimme, if you want to look at it in that mix, is Thursday night against the Trailblazers. But between that, the amount of road games they've got coming up, and an important game to start off April against the Miami Heat to hopefully fend them off and hold your hopes for avoiding the play-in, this is a difficult stretch for the Knicks coming up. And they've got to start getting some pieces back. They've got to start getting some bodies back out there. The reports that you hear about Anunoby and Robinson are promising, but you need these guys back out there. You need that depth, and you need that firepower back in this lineup. So hopefully in the next week to 10 days, they get those guys back. Hopefully at some point before the season ends, Julius Randle comes back for the Knicks. But unlike where we sat a month ago, where you thought, oh, the Knicks are just going to have an easy ride to the end of the season and be a top seed in the Eastern Conference, it's now hold your breath time, folks, because they're going to have to scratch and claw for every win here on out to avoid something that
we have to go. Good night, everybody.
I have had enough of you.
Thank you for all the fun. Thank you. Hey, shut up, will ya?
I don't want to see you. I don't want to hear you. I don't want to smell you. Now leave.
I'll be back.